إن ربك يعلم أنك تقوم أدنى من ثلثي الليل ونصفه وثلثه وطائفة من الذين معك والله يقدر الليل والنهار علم أن لن تحصوه فتاب عليكم فاقرؤوا ما تيسر من القرآن علم أن سيكون منكم مرضى وآخرون يضربون في الأرض يبتغون من فضل الله وآخرون يقاتلون في سبيل الله فاقرؤوا ما تيسر منه وأقيموا الصلاة وآتوا الزكاة وأقرضوا الله قرضا حسنا وما تقدموا لأنفسكم من خير تجدوه عند الله هو خيرا وأعظم أجرا واستغفروا الله إن الله غفور رحيم.
O Prophet, there are divergent reports about the date of this verse, which contains the revised command about the Tahajjud prayer. The following report is cited by Ahmad, Muslim, and Abu Dawud on Aisha's authority that the revised command was laid down only 1 year after the original command, changing the status of this prayer from obligatory, fard, to voluntary, nafal. Another report by Ibn Jarir and Ibn Abi Hatim, however, credits Aisha with the view that there was an interval of 8 months between the two commands. Ibn Jarir al-Tabari. Yet another report, attributed to her by Ibn Abi Hatim, however, speaks of the difference of 16 months between the two. Abu Dawud, Ibn Jarir, and Ibn Abi Hatim state on the authority of Abdullah ibn Abbas, the period of 1 year. However, Sayyid ibn Jubair insists that these verses were revealed 10 years later. In our opinion, this last view seems more credible, for the first section of the surah is patently Makkan in origin and was sent down in the very early days of Islam, at most 4 years after the Prophet, peace be upon him, assumed his office. In contrast, on the basis of its internal evidence, the second section appears to have been revealed in Medina when the fighting had commenced with the disbelievers and the command for paying zakah had also come into force. So there must be a gap of at least 10 years between the revelation of the two sections. Your Lord knows that you sometimes stand up in prayer nearly two-thirds of the night and sometimes half or one-third of it. Although the command for standing in prayer was up to midnight or a bit more or less than it, one engaged in prayer could not keep an exact count of time, especially when there were no clocks around. So at times, the prayer went up to two-thirds or was reduced to one-third of the night. And so does a party of those with you. The command was initially directed at the Prophet, peace be upon him, advising him to stand up in prayer at night. However, since the early Muslims were very keen on emulating the Prophet, peace be upon him, and earning reward, most of the companions too made it a point to offer the Tahajjud prayer regularly. Allah measures the night and the day. He knows that you cannot keep an accurate count of it, so He has shown mercy to you. So now recite as much of the Quran as you can. Since the length of a prayer depends on the amount of the Quran recitation in it, the directive was to recite as much of the Qur'an as the Prophet, peace be upon him, could do. By shortening the recitations, the length of the prayer would also be automatically reduced. Although the command appears to be imperative, the consensus view is that the Tahajjud prayer is not a fard, but a nafal prayer. This is further clarified in a hadith that when someone inquired of the Prophet, peace be upon him, about the obligatory prayer, he replied, "The five daily prayers are obligatory on you." When he further queried whether he was obliged to offer anything else, he replied, "No, unless you desire to offer something else besides it." Bukhari and Muslim. Another point emerging from the above verse is that like ruku, bowing, and sujood, prostration, the Quran recitation is also an essential component of the prayer. As at other places, God has used the words ruku and sujood to mean the prayer here, he mentions the recitation of the Quran as a synonym for the prayer. were one to raise the question that since the tahajjud prayer itself is nafl, how can the Quran recitation as part of it be obligatory? The answer is that all the requisites of a prayer are to be fulfilled even if it is a nafl prayer. No one can say that in the nafl prayer, purity of the clothes and body, ablution, and covering the body are not obligatory, and the recitation of the Quran, making ruku and prostrations are just voluntary. He knows that there are among you those who are sick and others who are journeying in the land in quest of Allah's bounty. Traveling in the land in quest of God's bounty is the Quranic phrase for seeking lawful means of livelihood. And still others who are fighting in the cause of Allah. Seeking lawful sustenance and fighting in the cause of God are mentioned together in the above. Those engaged in these as well as those disabled by sickness are offered a concession for tahajjud prayer. This underscores the importance of earning lawful sustenance in Islam. Abdullah ibn Masud relates that the Prophet, peace be upon him, said, "One who brings a grain in a town of Muslims and sells it at the price of the day will attain proximity with Allah." After making this observation, he recited the Quranic verse under discussion. Umar remarked, "Next to the fighting in the cause of God, I would love to die while journeying through a mountain valley in search of my livelihood." Then he recited the above verse. So recite as much of the Quran as you easily can, and establish prayer and pay zakah. Commentators on the Quran agree that prayer here denotes the five daily prayers which are obligatory. Likewise, zakah denotes the obligatory alms. And give Allah a goodly loan. According to Ibn Zayd, reference here is to spend one's wealth in the way of God, apart from paying zakah, whether it is in the cause of fighting in the path of God, helping the servants of God, or acts of public welfare, or any philanthropic work. Ibn Jarir al-Tabari. We have already explained the meaning of giving God a goodly loan at several places. Whatever good you can send forth for yourselves, you shall find it with Allah. That is better, and its reward is greater. And ask for Allah's forgiveness. Surely, He is most forgiving, most compassionate. Whatever good things man sends forth for the hereafter is much better than his wealth which he hoards in this life, refusing to spend it for winning God's pleasure. Abdullah ibn Masud reports that once the Prophet, peace be upon him, asked, "Who among you holds his heir's belongings dearer than his own?" Those present replied, "No one among us holds his heir's belongings dearer than his own." He remarked, "Weigh carefully what you are saying. Your real belongings are those good acts of yours which you send forth for the hereafter. Whatever you hold back actually belongs to your heir." Bukhari, Nasa'i, and Musnad of Abu Ya'la.